that from the middle 60s, after you ceased being the secretary, treasurer, and keeping the division going, Sydney, your own library was becoming a much bigger thing than it had been previously, wasn't it?
Yeah. Constantly growing and growing. But of course, you see, I didn't worry about the history division so much, although I'd occasionally attend the meeting. In the 60s, at that time, my philanthropic work, particularly for Israel, assumed an enormous amount of my time.
Will you talk a little about that?
See, that was
involved in.
See, I've had three professions. One is being a chemist and running a chemical company. Two, writing and working in the history of science, particularly chemistry and dyes and dyeing. Third profession was a philanthropist working in fundraising for different organizations, particularly a lot for things that are Jewish and in Israel.
When did you first go to Israel?
The first trip was in 1959.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And were you already involved in?
I was involved. Yes, time? I was involved in fundraising in my community and things connected with Israel and things connected with colleges and education concerned with Jewish things. I was also active in working for the local hospital and all such things. This was a part of my life. It didn't have to be just Jewish. This has always been that. But when I, about the same time that I gave up the being a secretary of the Division of History and Chemistry, my philanthropic work became much bigger and broader, particularly in connection with Israel. And I became one of the national chairmen of the biggest one of the biggest fundraisers in the world, the United Jewish Appeal. And that was a time, more or less, before the 67 war in Israel, and at the time of the 67 war and the period afterwards. I spent, I would say, two-thirds of my time working, traveling in the United States. I would take missions to Israel, different groups, bring them back, many on their first trips. I, for several years, had charge of certain communities to see that they did, which included, to give some idea of the traveling, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, Birmingham, Alabama, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. That was in addition to all the other places that I went to in a different capacity. But these, I was the parent and the guy to keep them going.
And this was in the late 60s, was it?
That's right. In fact, in a number of these cases, I traveled around the country in a private jet, going to see people, moving into little towns, places where you normally don't get to. All in campaigning the things for Israel. And if you talk about another job, I had another job then, really. And that's been a big part of my life, and it still is.
But that especially intensive phase of it was
was for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have no concept of the what's involved. Also, interesting, Mildred and I were in Israel at the time, in 73, the Yom Kippur War broke out. And instead of running away, we stayed for many months there, trying to be involved and helpful. I used to watch the planes go up and see how many came back each day. We helped with the hospital. Everybody was at war. There were no men left. We did what we could. And even certain special equipment, even arranged for Dexter to buy certain special equipment, smaller things that were needed they just didn't have, and sent over by a special thing on a plane to Israel, and get it to the different parts of the war. On the third day of the war, where it looked like Syria was breaking through, I was up on the front. Managed to get up there where the bombs were dropping. And I mean, the crazy things, and I looked back, they said I was nuts, and I got together the soldiers from the town where I lived in and came back the same day. It's an unbelievable thing where you can go from your home to the war by car and come back. I mean, those are special things. But I think a big thing is really, as far as philanthropy and the idea of my library going to Israel rather than to other places. I don't know, how much do you want on all of you?
Just, will you talk about your library and its development and the decision to send it to...
Of course, my library was built up and came one of the best as far as chemistry and particularly dyes and dyeing in private hands in the world. I mean, as far as the specialty thing. There were not too many great things that were missing. And a lot of manuscript material, a lot of letters, a lot of special... thing, a lot of special, unusual copies that you would never expect. Copies that started a controversy, for example. Trying to think of the name. Well, I won't say, but a lot of things in special bindings, special early books that were built for published on extra large paper for the king or a pope. On blue paper, all sorts of things like that in the library. And the books were, if they'd been normal, they would have been important. But I mean, I enjoyed all of those special type of things. Just thinking of the thing, there was a copy of Faraday's book on chemical manipulation, which he gave, and supposedly he had bound himself. He was a leather bind, you know, that was a thing. For, you know, things of that nature. The library, why did it end up there? Firstly, the library was a great love in my collection. And it required a fairly big house, a lot of room to keep and to use such a collection. As we got older, Mildred, my wife and I were living in a big house, which we were out of the country or away most of the time. And it was a constant worry, what would happen? We kept a housekeeper there, but still there's always a possibility of rain and this and that and vandalism, and there's always a worry. We often talk, what would happen when I died? What would happen to the library? And I made various suggestions. My wife could arrange to have it sold, a way to handle with the dealer, let other people see it, and the money could be used for charitable purposes, etc. It was a terrible worry for her. We were stuck in the house because of the library. Gradually, I decided that the library should be given while I was alive somewhere where it could be used. How did it end up in Jerusalem? Well, first, you must remember my particular concern about Israel. Secondly, I'm always proud that basically the Jews are really known as people of the book. Things that are written are important treasures. It's a thing that goes on for thousands of years among the Jews. I had seen libraries and books given to a number of places in this country. For example, the famous collection, the Wheeler Collection on Electricity. One of the greatest collection in the world was given to the engineers, the society, and the thing, and gradually it ended up in the shelves, and gradually were taken out, and most of them disappeared, were stolen. And even some of them, when I bought books out of the thing, they originally came from the Wheeler Collection. I can envision me doing this here and the same thing happening, and who knows, a new curator. I didn't know where to give it, really. I had given certain special things to the Hebrew University because the Hebrew University also has the National Library of Israel. That is part. The Library of the Hebrew University and the National Library, which is like the Congressional Library, are one and the same thing. And the university keeps up the National Library. The National Library had been a repository for Judaica, many other things. I had given a number of things to the university, to the library, over a period of years, very rare special things. For example, several of Newton's manuscripts on alchemy, a little diary of John Locke. There was a missing one that really belonged in the Bodley Library, but they were very stupid about it, and I had decided to give it to Israel and told them they could change it for Judaica with the Bodleian Library if they wanted to. Anyhow, a few things like that I had from time to time given. The head librarian from Israel would come and visit me, and often I'd send back some little precious thing that was a present to the library. There had been some very well-known historians of science at the Hebrew University. Sam Bursky, particularly, very famous, very well-known. And he used to visit me on occasion to come to the United States. And I knew that the university was involved in the history of science, not in the history of chemistry as such, but certainly broadly in the history of science. There had been some good scholars. One day I get a little book sent to me by Reuben Yaron, who was head of the library, which described a number of Newton items that had been given. I think it's called the Yehuda Collection of Newtonia. A lot of Newton manuscripts and things. And he thought I'd be interested since I'd given the thing. And I said, you know, maybe this is the place. I went over on one of our trips. We spent time. I saw how they handled the books. I saw the feeling that existed for books and things. I said, what the hell? We'll put it here. And we'll use it as a nucleus for studying the history of chemistry and the science, but I know it'll be looked after and within reason. I know people care about it, and there's nothing like it. And I want to make Israel the center as much as possible for this type of thing.
When was that decision?
That was done about 12 years ago or something, more or less. About approximately 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the book finally was set up, that little book you have, the date, gives the first exhibition. The library had been there a year or two. But as a part of the thing, the university doesn't have enough funds, and they couldn't. If I sent the library there, it would end up like some of the other collections. It would be there and be looked after. People would come and use it, but it wouldn't be really promoted. So I said, look, I'll pay for a curator to look after the library. It is unbelievable. That library, but in any other place, would not be used. It is unbelievable the amount of work, the people that come and study, students that come and are shown things. We now have a very, you know, the new building part that we put, and it's used 20 times what it would have been used any other place. And of course, from that, there are other great collections at the university, which became all a part of my library. The big collection, the history of medicine, the Yehuda collection on Newton, and of course, the great Einstein things are coming in a way are connected. They're not in the Edelstein Library, but this Edelstein Center is a part and will be on that. So it is slowly becoming a center for scholars to work in the history of chemistry, but also in the history of science. Interestingly enough, there's a gentleman, one of the fellows at the Edelstein Center, especially comes from England. His specialty in his real field, he wanted, is the dye industry, the beginning of the dye industry in the 19th century, starting from Perkin and all that type of stuff. He's done very good work. He said no place in the world could he have the material such as exists in the library. He's now given, his papers are being published here, they're being published in England. He's setting a big thing on another Perkin centennial or whatever it is, with ICI is doing it, and he's doing some excellent work using it. I mean, that's one. In addition, now he's out working with the high schools and giving information on industrial chemistry in the beginnings and as it fitted into Israel and how it compared with Europe and all such things as that. It's being used. Mm-hmm. Important. So that's the story of how it got there.
Well, that's these are a number of very strategic and impressive contributions.
Well, I mean, they're you know, you're familiar with all of the center. It hasn't started, and if I live a while, I would keep pushing a lot of the things. But philanthropic work has been, my wife and I, what we've tried to be is catalysts, not just have another of something, but to try to start something which will be followed by many others. You know, we built the first community center, more or less, there in Israel, which is built on the border in the town of Kiryat Shemona, which you heard, been a constant, it's a famous place. Even all the negotiations in Lebanon are held there. Every day, it made the town a different town that had nothing. We started the daycare center movement in Israel. We built the first several of these. Today, there are hundreds of them. We built seven of them. We started the first thing to try to train religious girls to get out of the kitchen and the house and do something useful. Built the first vocational high school in Israel, which is a tremendous step, where these religious girls, now these are the kind that are kept like, almost like Arab girls, you know, are being trained as nurses. Most of it is trained them as nurses, where they are never permitted to minister to a man or to study anything about the male thing. Here, it's the first breakthrough. Now there'll be others. These are things we try to do. And we do it, and that takes it's effort. The money is one thing. We have to get the money, but the other is to see and to be and to encourage and to push and not let any of these things die. And it's taken a lot of time and effort.
What are your big projects at this time, Sydney? Where does most of your energy go? What is it that you're hoping to see happen in the near future?
Well, as far as industry, you mean chemical side?
On all three fronts, all three careers.
One side, we are working involved very high, very deeply in the field of psoriasis and control of psoriasis, because I'm a sufferer from psoriasis. And I know all the treatments and all the things heretofore have not been, I mean, they suffer from something or other. I'm familiar with everything. I've read every article. I've tried everything. However, we're working on, in a field of certain derivatives of fumaric acid, psoriasis, basically, psoriatic people, is due to the fact that fumaric acid is not in the cells. It is not formed enough. All of these side treatments, like light, simply form a certain amount of fumaric acid from another acid, but the light doesn't. The big problem is forming a compound which is absorbed through the intestinal wall into the bloodstream and will break down, carried to the cells, break apart, and give you the fumaric acid that you need. I presently am taking some of my own things, and I'm 99% clear of the whole thing. And we're doing a lot of research. We have a lot of hospital things. We feel we have non-toxic things for doing it. I think that's a big project that I'm concerned about in the field from every aspect. First, it's a real contribution. We worked it out because in the United States, there, I would say, near as we can gather statistically, there are 10 million people that have psoriasis well known to them and bad, and another 10 million that don't realize these rashes and these things they have as psoriasis. And I feel certain, within a year or so, we'll be ready almost maybe for tests here with the FDA for the answer. That is not a cure. There's not a cure, but to provide, without any harm, the thing that you, that the body needs, the cell needs, to, when you, to prevent psoriasis. That's a big, that's a project that I personally am working closely with, and we're doing the research in the hospitals and things in Israel. It's easier and cheaper. We have contact with the FDA, and we'll bring certain things over before too long. That's a field. The other field, and the philanthropic side, is number one, my work in many, many aspects for the Hebrew University. The Hebrew University is the key university of the Jewish people. It's the key to all the other colleges in Israel. It has trained in law. It's the only real agricultural school, a great one that has the greatest medical school, hospital thing. And it needs help in many ways, particularly not only financially but in direction. I'm one of the governors of the university, spend time with it. It's not only money but also movement and changes in the operation of the university. In fact, I was over just for that a week ago. And in fundraising, which I'm deeply involved in various aspects of fundraising in general, because the university is operating way below the way it should. Many of the teachers have been dismissed because of money, not cost. The government doesn't have the money. All the professors and teachers and everything have taken a 7% cut in their salary, which is very comparatively small to begin with, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, this is important, to keep a great university like this going in the right way. So there are various aspects of fundraising and the various aspects of arranging the university to operate a little differently in certain ways, better control. The other thing that I plan to do and be involved in greatly, of course, is the Einstein Papers, which, as you know, Einstein as well left all his papers, some 50,000 documents, etc., to the Hebrew University. While there is agreement theoretically with the press at Princeton to publish a big part over a number of years, all the papers and all the things are given and are at the Hebrew University. It's a big thing to properly classify these, to put them in shape, to guard them. We now have raised some funds for a full-time curator and an assistant curator just to take in care and begin to work. We expect to have, in the case of Einstein, obviously, he ranks with many people, with Newton and other great shakers in the field of science, and the papers offer a way of scholars from all over the world studying. Many aspects of his work and things should be studied by scholars, and we expect to raise a lot of money, what we consider a hunk of money, to provide for scholars, proper taking care of, and bringing out all the information concerned with Einstein's work and the various derivative works that have come from his thing. Takes a lot of time, etc. That's my main project. It's things connected with the university. Of course, my other project, which is important to me, is to stop experimenting with golf and finally work out a system that fits me properly so it can work. That's the story. Now, look, I'm 76 years old. I still feel young and still do, but I'm in...
Well, it's a remarkable...
You look at things in a more relaxed way.
It's a remarkable set of achievements.
I feel I don't have to prove anything anymore. I was always feeling I got to prove I can do this, I can do this, we can do that. I don't, that doesn't worry me. I'm not concerned.
It sounds as if you've still got quite an agenda.
Well, there is.
Well, Sid, thank you very much.
Look.